Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, today, the Florida Roundup goes statewide as we welcome listeners from all over Florida. We are on the air in Tampa, Orlando, Miami, Jacksonville, Gainesville, and the Treasure Coast. And we're excited to hear from you, Florida. In just a few minutes, we'll take your calls from across the state as we talk about the biggest stories from the week.
Melissa, we got a lot to talk about this week. Very busy week in sunshine politics, the environment, healthcare, taxes. The red tide that's been plaguing the Gulf Coast for almost a year now has shown up in the waters off of South Florida's beaches. President Obama's endorsement in the governor's race here brings the focus to healthcare. And then Republicans in Florida also in the race. Well, the Republicans are going after the opponent, the Democrat, over taxes.
So what issue will attract you to the polls? And maybe you're not registered as a Republican or a Democrat, like so many of you out there in Florida. If you're a no-party affiliated voter, what issue is going to sway your vote in the race for governor and U.S. Senate? Maybe you're thinking about crossing party lines in these midterms. Whatever's on your mind, call us now here on the Florida Roundup statewide at 305-995-1800. We'll go to your calls in just a few minutes. You can also tweet us. It's at Florida Roundup. All of that ahead. But first this hour, we spoke recently with Tallahassee Mayor and Democrat Andrew Gillum about his campaign for Florida governor. Take a listen. Mayor Gillum, thanks so much for being with us. We'd like to begin by asking you about your environmental platform. You were campaigning about the red tide that's encircling the state the other day in Siesta Key, and you're calling for a plan that calls for everything from funding septic to sewer conversion programs, banning fracking, to transitioning to renewable energy. These are all progressive positions that you've staked out, and you've called your opponent, Ron DeSantis, an electioneer environmentalist. How does your plan on addressing environmental issues really differ from Mr. DeSantis's, given that he's actually supporting a lot of the same positions you are?
Well, with the exception that I actually have a history on trying to get some of these things done, we've upgraded significantly our sewer system in Tallahassee during my time on the city commission and as a mayor. The same week that Donald Trump broke ground on the same week he pulled out of the Paris Accord, in my city, we broke ground on a 120-acre solar farm, tripling the amount of solar energy that we've produced. We've also adopted a unanimous resolution in our community, our city hall, to move toward 100% renewable by 2035. So the difference is that in this election year, we now are hearing from Ms. DeSantis on his proposed plans. And what we're talking about is not just where we're trying to go, but also where we have been as a community and what we've actually done. And so voters will have to make the choice of whether or not you trust me on these issues or you trust the person who is taking huge sums of money from some of the biggest polluting industries in the state of Florida. When it comes down to it, I think voters will have to assess between myself and him, not just the plans that we put on paper, but what have we done to advance a more clean and renewable future here in the state of Florida? Florida ought to be leading the rest of the nation on what it means to basically deal with climate change and sea level rise and, frankly, teach the rest of the nation and the rest of the world how to build a more resilient state in the face of it. We're the Sunshine State, and we also ought to lead on solar.
When you talk about Ron DeSantis taking money from what you called largest polluters, are you talking about the sugar industry specifically?
Well, he's specifically endorsed by the Associated Industries of Florida. We know that that group has staked out positions that have not been good for the environment over the course of their existence, particularly over the last 8 years during this administration. And so, again, I think voters have to assess whether or not they're electing a governor who is going to stand by their word. And all I'm simply saying is, in our case, we have stood by it. We have advanced these kinds of policies.
Let me ask you about some other issues quickly, Mayor Gillum. Whether it comes to raising corporate taxes, paying teachers $50,000 a year, a $15 an hour minimum wage, Amazon, by the way, just came out and said they will be paying their employees that. How do you propose to pay for these initiatives?
Yeah, well, on teachers, what we have laid out is a plan that would make the corporate tax rate in the state of Florida comparable to that of our neighbors in Georgia and Alabama. We're the third largest state in all of America. And the truth is that in order to educate our kids, right now the Florida education system is ranked about 40th out of 50th in quality. Our teachers, on average, make an average salary that is the 45th lowest out of 50 states. We're the third largest state in America. The question is how is it that we are going to continue to compete not only across the 50 states, but across the world, considering that we live in a global economy? We have got to develop the future workforce and invest in our next generation, not only leaders, but our next generation entrepreneurs, innovators. On the corporate tax rate, only 3% of companies in the state of Florida pay the corporate tax rate. We're not asking to expand that. In fact, under my administration, companies will pay less over my tenure than they've paid under Rick Scott's tenure. What we're simply saying is that if we're going to produce the workforce that we need, we've got to ensure that we're paying teachers what they're worth, that we're investing in our kids, and that we reinfuse back into our public education system the kind of skills trainings that used to exist. While college worked for me, for my older brothers, it was woodwork, shop, mechanical, electrical, technical programs. All of that allowed those folks to get a skill that they could monetize, go to work, and get a good job. And we basically exhausted that writ large across the public education system, creating only these specialty programs for a few when we know that roughly half our kids aren't on their way to community college or to university, and we've got to support them there.
Let me ask you about the $50,000 teacher pay initiative that you have. Is that across the board, and would that be mandated by the state? In other words, it would be a policy that would be set forth in Tallahassee for local school boards to have to follow, and would that $50,000 be the same in Duval County, where my colleague is, and the same in Miami-Dade County, where I am?
Well, the dollar menu is the same in both those counties, and we all face an affordable housing crisis in both those counties and in counties all across the state, to include rural areas of our state. What I would say is we're going to work with the 67 counties to make sure that we have a sustainable plan for increasing teacher salaries to above the national average.
So it's not something would require the school districts to do.
We are not going to disrupt what is a very active bargaining between the teachers, organized teachers union, and the school boards. We can't disrupt that process. It is one that's in place and well established. But what we're setting is a North Star for where we want to go as a state. And what we're simply saying through our policy is Florida can be better than average. Florida at least needs to be at average when it comes to teacher pay, but we can be better than average. Teachers should not spend their time moonlighting between being retail workers at night and then teaching our kids in the daytime. It used to be an honorable middle-class profession, and we have slowly but surely removed that distinction and designation from teachers, and now we're having a hard time recruiting teachers into this state and maintaining them within the profession the way that I had the same teacher that my brothers before me had and the older ones before that had, because we're losing many of these dedicated, committed professionals because they can't afford it anymore.
Let me ask you about health care, Mayor Gillum. You have said on the campaign trail and on television in new ads that you believe that health care is a right, not a privilege. You've called for expanding Medicaid for more than 800,000 Florida residents. You want protections for pre-existing conditions. In the area of health care, the contrast between you and your opponent, Ron DeSantis, seems the starkest. You have charged your opponent, Mr. DeSantis, with seeking to end protections for patients with pre-existing conditions. He's pushed back on that accusation. How will you work with the legislature to expand Medicaid and expand health care coverage in Florida, given that if you are elected governor, you'll be working with a pretty conservative legislature?
Yeah, I'm simply going to ask the legislature to do the bidding of the people of the state of Florida, not special interests, not big insurers, but one in five people in our state are terrified of getting sick. They fear that one illness may put them in the poorhouse, in bankruptcy. And I'm not just talking about working poor. I'm talking about middle-class families who get up every day to get out there and provide for themselves and their families. I'm talking about small business owners who are finding it extremely difficult to provide full coverage for their employees because of the rising cost. And so what we have said is that if we expand access to health care for over 800,000 of the most medically needy people in our state, we will pull down $6 billion from the federal government that right now is being distributed to other states because Florida has decided to put our heads in the sand when it comes to expanding access to Medicaid. Not only is it important to expand access for those who are uninsured, one in five people in our state, but it is also important for small business owners and those of us who do have insurance, because when we look at our premium increases year over year over year, they're increasing without prediction because the system has to pay for itself one way or another. And right now, those uninsured are getting access through emergency rooms, which is the most expensive and least efficient form of care. I am not accusing my opponent of anything that he himself has not said or done. I don't believe in being dishonest in the course of these races. It is my opponent who voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act repeatedly and joined an obstructionist wing of the Republican Party in Congress to do so. It is my opponent who said the reason why we don't have to provide health care for all is because everybody has access to an emergency room. It is my opponent who has advocated for requiring insurance companies not to have to cover people with pre-existing conditions.
And let me ask you about that point, Mr. Mayor. Would you support or advocate or lobby the legislature, if elected, for a state law in Florida that requires health insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions for Floridians?
Absolutely. It is the federal status quo, and it ought to be the status quo here in the state of Florida. Cancer patients, folks with diabetes, even age in some cases. And in the state of Florida, a pregnant woman is a pre-existing condition. Who among us would believe that you should be able to discriminate coverage for those individuals simply because of those conditions? I mean, Americans, by and large, all come to the table with some form of health issues. And so we can't go back to where we once were. That's what we've actually tried to eradicate from the system.
There is no
that kind of rampant health discrimination.
There is no individual mandate anymore for the Affordable Care Act. Would you like to have an individual mandate in the state of Florida?
Listen, I think we've got to move as many people into the pool as possible to include the healthiest as well as the sickest in that pool. We have to share the load.
But would you mandate that then? Require Floridians to have health insurance?
What I'm going to require is that we work with the legislature to expand Medicaid. And what we want to do, work with our insurance companies to insure more people. It is unacceptable for 15% of the people in this state not to have access to health care. As governor, I will work diligently to expand access.
Mayor Gillen, let me ask you a strategy question. You surprised a lot of people in the primary, expanding the Democratic side of the electorate, putting together a coalition that seemed to recall the Obama coalition that won this state twice. The other day, you campaigned in Palatka, a pretty conservative corner of Florida, and drew a huge crowd, or pretty big crowd for Palatka, for a Democratic candidate. That caught a lot of eyeballs. What is the challenge, though, for you going into November to turn out voters, given that your opponent, Mr. DeSantis, is going to have a very motivated base as well to turn out voters? The latest polling in this race shows the two of you essentially tied. And so not only is everyone in Florida watching this race, the eyes of the nation are on this race. So how do you plan to go forward between now and election day to turn out not only base Democratic voters, but how do you plan to win over independent voters who like a lot of what you're saying on the campaign trail, but might be undecided and might have concerns about the cost of some of your positions?
Well, I'll tell you, if you're an everyday working person in this state, the choice should be completely clear between myself and Ron DeSantis, that given my background and experience and the issues that we're leaning into in this race, that we're working hard to make the lives of everyday Floridians better. I have said all along, I'm going to campaign in every part of the state of Florida. You mentioned Palatka. We went down to Palm Coast. We've been to the villages, the most conservative voting area of this state, all throughout the panhandle, all over Duval County, where you all are. We're campaigning everywhere, because when you're governor of the state of Florida, you got to be the governor for all of the state of Florida. And we can't leave any of these votes to be taken for granted. I may not win these conservative counties, but we got to lose them less. I'm also going to campaign in some of the more urban areas of the state, because they want to know that we see them and we hear them, and that we have a plan to improve their lived conditions as well. It's my belief that as the candidate right now on the Democratic side campaigning for governor, we have got to stop treating the state of Florida like it's the Electoral College. We don't win one county and lose another, pick up one and lose another. The one who wins is the one who gets one more vote. And it's my job to get out there and try to let people know who I am. Let them know that they don't need to buy into the caricatures of me. I have 15 years of public policy making experience, and I've led in a very pragmatic way. I'm the leader of a community that right now is the fastest growing economy in the state of Florida per capita, 17th fastest growing in the nation per capita. We won a tech hire designation during the Obama administration for the work that we're doing to retrain workers on technology related jobs that exist today. I'm committed to that, not just in the community where I live now, but state of Florida, and I want Florida voters to know it.
Mayor Andrew Gillum, thanks for joining the Florida Roundup. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you all so much. Best wishes to everybody.
Now, we invited the Republican in the governor's race, Ron DeSantis, for an interview as well on our program. His team said the candidate would be available at an event on Thursday in Tampa, but did not accept the invitation for a separate sit-down interview. Steve Newborn was at that event this week in Tampa. He's the assistant news director and reporter at WUSF, our sister station in Tampa. Steve, let's talk about the environment here, because that has engulfed certainly your area and the Gulf Coast for almost a year. It is now in southeast Florida. What is DeSantis saying about how he would address the red tide in Florida if elected?
All right. Well, it's interesting. At the event in Ybor City here yesterday, he talked specifically about the blue-green algae that's affecting Lake Okeechobee and the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers, as well as the red tide that's affecting both coasts now. And as far as the blue-green algae, his position is to support building a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee that would filter the water and have it slowly go into the Everglades. This is something that's been talked about for decades, and he specifically said, because of his Washington connections as a congressman, he would help push the federal government to build that. Didn't address the cause of it, why this is happening, but this is kind of more of a solution to the problem that's hitting both coasts. And he briefly touched on red tide after the meeting, after his speech yesterday. He was talking to a bunch of reporters, and he mentioned that his first trip would be to go to Israel to investigate this. Now, that's not that is something that a lot of Republicans say to shore up their evangelical base, right? Mm-hmm. And he said he was going there to investigate ways of battling red tide. I haven't heard anything come out of there, but more power to him if he actually finds a solution there.
Right. Also, he attacked his opponent, Mayor Gillum's record in Tallahassee, particularly that city's crime rate. But after a rocky start, the DeSantis campaign seems to be getting more on track. Did you sense that at this event?
Yeah, there was a lot of energy at this event I went to. It was in a small venue. It's in the old Italian club in Ybor City, the Latin Quarter, so it only held a couple of hundred people. But there was a lot of energy in there. But what I specifically noticed was DeSantis looked a lot more, he looked more at ease on stage than he had during the primaries. He looked like he wanted to be there, which wasn't so true of some of the events he went to during the primaries. And he spent a lot of time afterwards shaking hands in the crowd and just
doing the retail politics thing. And we're going to keep talking about it. Yeah, Steve Newborn with WUSF, thanks for being with us. We are going to talk more about the governor's race and take your calls next here on the Florida Roundup, live statewide from Florida Public Radio, 305-995-1800 to join us. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks for listening. We're happy to welcome some new listeners this week in Tampa, Orlando, and the Treasure Coast. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. This is your chance to speak and to hear from folks throughout the peninsula. Here's the phone number now, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800. But you can also send us a tweet. Our handle is at Florida Roundup.
Well, just a few minutes ago, Tom, we heard from both the candidates for governor, Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis. This campaign is nothing short of an epic contest with starkly different visions, frankly, for the future of Florida. So who has the edge here, and which issues will define this race? Will it be the environment? Will it be education? Will it be President Trump? Will he weigh in as a factor in this race? There's a lot to discuss. Joining us now with their thoughts, we welcome Fernand Amandi. He's a Democratic pollster with Ben Dixon and Amandi, and Max Stepanovich, Republican strategist and Tallahassee lobbyist who served as chief of staff to former Florida Governor Bob Martinez. Fernand, Mac, thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great to have you both. We'll go to your calls on the governor's race in a moment at 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. Let's begin with you, Mac. You served as a chief of staff to a former governor, longtime Republican strategist. We listened to that long interview off the top of the hour with Andrew Gillum. Speaking as a Republican strategist, watching his campaign, which has generated a lot of enthusiasm and excitement around the state, what are your thoughts about Gillum's positions in terms of how progressive they are? Are they a bridge too far or not for moderate and independent voters in this state?
Well, I'm on a climb to from 10,000 feet to maybe 25,000 feet. I think that this is the most interesting gubernatorial election in my memory, including the ones that I was directly involved in. I'm going to submit that it is an echo, in a weird way, of the 2016 presidential race. You have Donald Trump in a multi-candidate field, won the nomination by being the most extreme guy in the race. He was the bomb-throwing iconoclast. He was going to drain the swamp. He was unlike the previous Republican nominees, where the criticism from the right had been is that they weren't extreme enough, and damn it if he didn't win. In this particular governor's race, that role is occupied by the Democrat, by Gillum. He is he emerged from a multi-candidate field, having the most extreme positions, generating the same kind of passion and enthusiasm. And oddly enough, Ron DeSantis has the Hillary Clinton role. He is the standard bearer of the status quo because he's seeking to succeed and become the fourth Republican governor in a row and extend a 20-year period of Republican hegemony in Tallahassee. He basically is for more of the same. So I think there's a great deal of irony in this race. Now, whether Gillum can sustain his momentum with all of these progressive positions, I don't know. I have a new superpower. I can make anybody, help anybody win an election by predicting that their opponent will win it.
It's an interesting analogy, Fernand Amandi. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, you know, I find myself in the awkward position of agreeing with the Republican strategist, Max Stepanovich. Truth be told, it is indeed a referendum on these 20 years of Republican rule, and I think that's why Ron DeSantis is trying to play, candidly, many of the old tricks in the Republican playbook, the scare tactics that we've seen over and over again. There was a moment, I think, in the race a couple of weeks ago where after the socialist tag didn't seem to work, DeSantis says, well, Andrew Gillum is going to be the Democratic governor that is going to institute the state income tax, mm-hmm. which is the boogeyman Republicans mm-hmm. have played over and over again, which promptly caused Andrew Gillum the very next day to say, no such thing. There will be no state income tax in the Democratic governor. And we heard it in, I think, the first part of this interview. You have an Andrew Gillum, a confident, poll-driven, because the polls suggest in every single one he is ahead. He is sounding like a front runner. He's running like a front runner. And I think in this stage of the campaign thus far, you see the dynamics laid out where, for the first time, the Democrats, unlike in years past, really seem to have a great degree of wind at their back going forward.
We've got a lot of calls coming in about Florida issues, especially red tide, water quality, the environment. We'll get to those calls in a moment. But Mac and Fernand, I want you to talk about the impact of what has happened today on this Friday, the cloture vote in the United States Senate regarding Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the United States Supreme Court. Obviously a federal issue, but how does that affect the non-party affiliated voter, the one out of every three voters in the state of Florida, the ground game that is necessary to get to win in November? Mac, how about it?
I'm a little ambivalent about the impact of the Kavanaugh confirmation fight. In a perverse way, I think that when you're talking about intensity and you're talking about turnout, I think that if Kavanaugh is confirmed, as it appears he will be, that the angriest people will be Democrats, and it might increase their intensity. Should he fail, the angriest people will be Republicans, and it might increase their intensity and turnout. I project myself onto this. As everyone knows, I loathe Donald Trump. I think he's a clear and present danger to American democracy. But the Kavanaugh fight has placed me in the uncomfortable position of being on the same side as him for the first time. And I think if you look at Bill Kristol and a lot of never-Trumpers around the country, it's had a similar effect. Now, whether this will be important at the polls, I don't know. But what Dianne Feinstein and the others on the committee and their allies in the press have done is reminded those of us who were focused on Trump and his defects about why we don't like Democrats.
Fernandez, does this excite either of the bases any more in Florida than they already were excited?
I don't believe so, principally because here in Florida, when you look at how the senators are voting, Rubio is voting along party lines on this, as is Nelson. It's not like in perhaps West Virginia or Maine, when the Collins and Manchin votes might go opposite to what their parties are going to be doing, that there may be an impact. And look, I hate to be the cynic about this, but it looks like Kavanaugh will be confirmed tomorrow, which would be October 6th. And we're talking about what the election impact would be on November 6th, 30 days from now, when a news cycle lasts 25 minutes in Trump's America. So I think the resonance won't be as much a month from now as folks like to think
as it is today. And if you're just tuning in, and you agree with that, Mac.
By this time next week, nobody will probably remember who Kavanaugh is, because Donald Trump will have moved the carrier task force up close to Iran or something.
Who can predict, right? If you're just tuning in, the Florida Roundup is live from way down at the bottom of the Florida Peninsula. We are live through the I-4 corridor, up in North Florida in Jacksonville, over west of us in Gainesville. We are taking calls all around the state right now at 305-995-1800 as we talk about this tight governor's race between Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis with strategist Mac Stepanovich and Fernand Amandi. Let's go to Bianca in Stewart. She says she's a single issue voter. Bianca, what's your big issue?
My big issue is the river quality. I live in Stewart and I'm right on the Indian River Lagoon, and we grew up on the water. My 28-year-old sister has breast cancer, along with Martin County having the highest breast cancer rates in the whole state. And now I have a son who, every time I take him to the pediatrician, they ask me, has he been exposed to the river? I just don't understand how we live in a state surrounded by water and we can't go near it. Our beaches are closed. Our children are getting sick by breathing it. Our dogs are dying by drinking the water. I'm just appalled, and this will be my single issue vote. I'm voting Democrat and Republican, whoever is putting this issue first. I don't care.
And who do you see is putting the issue first?
Originally, I really kind of thought that DeSantis was really putting that out there. He would put that first. He would say that's his, what he wants to do. Lately, Gillum is saying that as well, but is he saying that because more and more people are saying that that's important to them? I don't know. I'm kind of leaning more towards DeSantis on the governor side. Brian Mass is amazing. He is really fighting for this.
Okay. He's your congressman there, United States.
Yeah, your congressman there. Okay, right. Bianca. Yeah, thank you for that. So, Fernand and Mac. Fernand, let's start with you. These candidates are going after these voters who care so much about this issue. Water in Florida, whether it's river quality or the red tide, that is looking shaping up to be one of the defining issues of this cycle. Which candidate can win the day on the issue of the environment? Because in this state, the environment is the economy. Fernan, let's start with you.
Well, you know, once again, to the point that Mac and I made earlier, given the fact that Republicans own every single issue in Florida, for better or for worse, I think both Ron DeSantis and, in the case of the spillover effect to the U.S. Senate race, Rick Scott are on the wrong side of these issues. We also see beaches literally being closed down all across the state of Florida. Nothing gets the goad of voters when they try and do the Florida things that they love to do best and can't do it because of problems that a lot of people will end up, I think, correctly assigning to a government mismanagement. So in this case, I would hate to be the Republican of any contest having to defend the state's environmental record right now.
Mac, I thought it was telling that DeSantis's first policy on issues that came out, the first one was on the environment. It wasn't the economy, wasn't jobs, wasn't taxes, wasn't business development. The first issue paper out from the DeSantis campaign a few weeks ago was the environment.
Yeah, it's his best chance to distinguish himself from the past 20 years and to try to generate some excitement. It's kind of interesting. His criticisms on these issues are implicitly a criticism of the Republican-dominated legislature and Governor Scott's 8 years in office. I should say, by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, one of my clients is the United States Sugar Corporation, so I'm very, very familiar with this issue. And both of these guys are in full cry. I mean, Andrew's lieutenant governor running mate is Chris King. And the environment, the Everglades restoration, discharges from the lake were the centerpiece of his campaign, if not the only thing in his campaign. Mm. And DeSantis himself has taken a similar position.
Yeah.
This is a problem that requires a lot of money and a lot of time. most of it comes from septic tanks and that sort of thing. You know, what DeSantis' program, if you look at it, is what we're doing, building a new reservoir south of the lake, repairing the dike. So I don't know who comes out on top on this, but Fernando's probably right. The Democrats probably get the edge on this because they haven't been in charge.
Let's get a call in from Jacksonville. Janet also wants to talk about the environment. Janet, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Yes. I think there can be a lot of rhetoric about the environment and DeSantis' position on various proposals, but let's look at what he actually did while serving in the U.S. House. According to the League of Conservation Voters, and every year they produce a scorecard that tallies positive and negative votes on environmental bills, mm-hmm. environmental-related bills. Ron DeSantis voted against the environment 98% of the time during his term in office as a U.S. congressman. That tells a lot. It summarizes it all up. That's where he's coming from.
Yeah, Janet.
Now he wants to paint himself green. Do we believe it?
That'll be up to Florida voters. Let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Mac, I heard you giggle at that environmental rating record there by Congressman DeSantis. Is he running away from that record as he's trying to become a bit of a green candidate and not take sugar money, for instance, in the run for the governor's office?
Well, nobody in this race is taking money from agribusiness this year, which is, again, a departure and kind of interesting. I don't know much about DeSantis's record on the environment in Congress, but you cannot say that he did not come out of the chute like a bull on Everglades restoration and the lake and those sorts of things, somewhat to my great discomfort, I might add. So, again, and I'm being redundant, for which I apologize, they're fighting over preeminence on this issue, and I think that probably the outsider, the iconoclast, would have the edge at the end of the day over the status, standard bearer of the status quo.
And Fernanda, lots of tweets coming into the Florida Roundup. Here's one for you. He asked the show, what will people do to win back the Republican women who identified with Gwen Graham and might have been further emboldened to vote for her after Kavanaugh, but will now sit out, or worse, vote for your opponent? I think that's a tweet intended for Andrew Gillum. Your thoughts?
You know, indeed, and clearly women are going to play a very important role. We see it all around the country, not just women candidates running across Florida, women activism as well. But it's part of the calculation that a lot of people wonder if Andrew Gillum made the right choice with his lieutenant governor pick. He was considering a couple of female legislators. One was Lauren Book here in South Florida, mm-hmm. another one a Hispanic woman in the Orlando area. But I think fundamentally, to the extent that there are concerns right now and how the women's vote sees a partisan divide, the polls suggest overwhelmingly they are siding with the Democratic candidate. So I think Andrew Gillum is probably going to be the beneficiary of the whatever female Republican straggler voters there are there, maybe wanting to hold their nose and for the first time in a long time not vote their party.
Yeah, the...
go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just going to say... the women's vote is obviously going to be critical in this election, as will independents. I mean, I think it'll be close enough that almost any large demographic cell could make the difference. But I didn't understand the Chris King pick, frankly. It may be that there was just no relationship between Gwen and Andrew. Again, in the interest of full disclosure, she's the godmother of my dog, Maybelle, so I thought he should have picked her.
Oh, my goodness. This is what happens when you book someone who's been working around Tallahassee for decades.
Godparents for pets. Okay.
Well, fair enough.
real quickly to both of you before we go, Mr. Trump, President Trump, not expected to campaign with Ron DeSantis till later this month when early voting begins in Florida. The Trump factor in this race.
Yeah.
Fernand.
I think Donald Trump is about as popular in Florida as the guacamole algae soup is intoxicating many of the lakes. And in fact, I think Donald Trump has become toxic. If you don't believe me, just ask every Republican House candidate and congressional candidate that is furiously turning down every invitation of President Trump to come down and campaign with him. We just saw that happen again in the last couple of days. And even Ron DeSantis, it was reported, said thanks but no thanks to the president for a public rally, but yes to a fundraiser. So I think he's going to be the X factor here.
More on the Florida Roundup after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, this week, Rick Scott and Bill Nelson met for their first debate in the race for the U.S. Senate. And there were parts of this interaction that was anything but a polite policy debate.
The governor keeps coming out with one whopper after another. Apparently, you never got your mouth washed out with soap.
Senator Nelson said that I control the Attorney General in Florida. He's a little bit confused.
Now, there were some discussions about policy as it relates to the state of Florida, including the two politicians' record on the environment. First Nelson, then Scott.
He has systematically, in his 8 years as governor, systematically disassembled the environmental agencies of this state. He has drained the water management districts of funding.
I put up state dollars, and finally, in the last year, I went to the president and went to Congress and have gotten the money, and the dike will be finished by 2022.
The latest polls show a very tight race between Nelson and Scott. Nelson up right now by just 1 point. Who will get your vote in the Senate race? 305-995-1800. You can also tweet us at Florida Roundup as we continue now with Democratic pollster Fernand Amandi and Republican strategist Max Stepanovich. Fernand, This race is just as tight now as the one we were previously discussing between Gillum and DeSantis. These two races are really intertwined. You know, say Gillum goes over the top, will he pull Nelson along behind him, or vice versa? If Ron DeSantis beats Gillum, is he going to give Rick Scott the boost he needs? It's fascinating to watch them play out in parallel tracks. Your thoughts?
Well, it is indeed. And, you know, Bill Nelson was doing a spike the football touchdown dances the night that Andrew Gillum got across the finish line, because he knows that that's going to energize a lot of Democrats, and especially African-American voters. Let's face it, Bill Nelson has never in his political life faced an opponent like this one in Rick Scott, who Mac will surely tell you, and he's heard the stories like I have. Rick Scott right now is in a room, Terminator style, looking at 67 charts and polls and saying, how much do I need to spend to win by one percentage point? And he will spend every last cent of that million plus or dollars willing to do so. Having said that, it's ironic because everybody talks about the coattail effect. If there is going to be a coattail effect, Bill Nelson's going to hope it's got to be from the bottom up, because the governor's race is literally three slots after the Senate race and the congressional races here. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But right now, not nearly as much breathing room for Bill Nelson as Andrew Gillum suggests to be having when you compare the polls.
Mac.
Yeah, I would basically agree with that. The best thing that's happened to Bill in his campaign for re-election was Gillum's nomination. He provides the passion and the excitement and the youth that Bill so very much lacks. It is going to be tight there. I think that if Gillum won decisively, I don't know what that means, I think he could pull... He might not only pull Bill across the line, he might pull a couple of cabinet races across the line. It's going to be really interesting.
That it will. 305-995-1800 statewide on the peninsula here in Florida for the Florida Roundup. Down at the end, Miami Beach, Roger has been patient, wants to talk about the environment and the governor. Go ahead, Roger. You're on the radio.
Yes, thank you. As you mentioned, in Miami Beach, we now have a low amount of red tide, but further up the coast, still in our county, all over beach, is low to moderate. They're testing. We don't know what the result will be. And I'll tell you, I will blame Rick Scott on this, who cut, as you mentioned earlier, funds for water sampling, who cut environmental concerns, who even said that in state documents you could not say the words climate change or sea level rise. And lo and behold, here we are with not only red tide now on both coasts, we have green blue algae on our coast, the East Coast, and this is a serious matter, because if you've got Miami Beach with red tide and that makes the national news, the impact would be devastating.
Roger, let me ask you, clearly you are putting this at the feet of Governor Scott, but is there any blame in your mind to Senator Nelson and a federal response or lack thereof during his tenure in the United States Senate especially?
Well, it could be. I mean, I guess he could have, maybe he did attempt to do something and just couldn't get it done. I don't know. You know, there's talk about the dike on Okeechobee and so forth. But, you know, red tide is red tide, and Mother Nature has the last say and gets revenge. And you've got Rick Scott right here in Florida, who has seen this and for 7.5 years hurt the environment. And now, in an election year, in the last 6 weeks or so before the election, finally gives our southeastern counties some money to fight this. Where was he for the past 7.5 years?
Roger, we got it. Thanks for checking in from Miami Beach. Mac, let me put this to you. You are a veteran of a lot of gubernatorial and Senate campaigns here. Have you ever seen the environment play the kind of role it's playing here in 2018 this late in the election cycle? Certainly, environment can play a role in the summertime when we've seen these algae blooms before, but they have tended to die off or reduce by the time we get into October.
Yeah, if Gillum was the best thing that happened to Bill Nelson, the red tide is the worst thing that has happened to Rick Scott. There is a tendency, as that caller just did, to conflate a whole lot of things that may not quite be fair. Somebody can correct me, but I don't think anybody knows what causes red tide. We've been
it's algae and a bacterium, and it's naturally occurring. Unlike the blue green tide, which is not naturally occurring, the red tide is a natural occurrence.
That's exactly right. And this year, it is much worse than it normally is. It's usually around. I think it's, you go back to the early 1800s, and you can see records of red tide. So I always say that if you're the governor, you're going to get the praise and you're going to get the blame. You could go out and pick 1,000 people at random in the state of Florida, tell them you were going to shoot them if they didn't name at least one of the presiding officers, either the president, the senator, the speaker of the house. You'd have to shoot 996 of them. The other four would be related to Negron or Corcoran. So the governor gets the blame. He gets the credit. I'm not sure the blame is well placed on the red tide thing, though.
You know, Tom, to your point, this is such a fascinating issue because as a pollster, I've always looked at the environment, and it's never, ever the most important issue, even though a lot of people are passionate about it. People think it's an important one. When you actually try and prioritize, it never rises. What I think is different about both the red tide and the algae bloom issue, and the reason it's a factor so late, is it's visceral. This is an issue that is now outside of the ephemeral, and it's in people's lives. It literally stinks.
It's in their eyes and noses.
It's in their eyes and noses.
It's right in your face. But let me, in the couple of minutes we have left, let's point out that vote by mail has already started in Florida. So really, the election is officially underway. By the way, it's the first time ever since Florida became a two-party state that more Democrats than Republicans are asking to cast their ballot through the Postal Service. That said, the intensity, I think, is up on both sides. Fernand and Mac, as we close out this program, you said at the top of the hour, Mac, that this recalls Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, which I thought was a really interesting analogy. Have you ever seen a governor's race quite like this in Florida, with these two really different candidates and this much rancor and partisanship? This is really, I think, one for the books. Fernand?
No, in a nutshell. Why? Because this is the most nationalized governor's race for Florida that I think we've ever seen, certainly in my lifetime. I think Mac would probably agree. This race is a referendum for what is happening nationally. You have two candidates representing what a lot of people think are on the extreme wings of their party. And as the 2018 midterms have really become a referendum on Donald Trump, people are looking at this Florida governor's race and what it will mean for 2020. Yeah. Let's not forget, he or she who wins the governor's mansion in Florida is usually a tremendous indicator of who's going to carry Florida's 29 electoral votes. And that's why not only is there so much attention and drama, it could be so determinative and definitive. Once again, Florida in the middle of everything.
Yeah, it's really it really is, as I said in the beginning, the most interesting governor's race in my memory. Gillum is a progressive. He's a liberal's liberal. He is a great society, New Deal Democrat, and he's unapologetic about it and doubling down on it. I think that DeSantis is trying to slowly and subtly maybe slide away from Trump towards the center just a little bit. Whether he'll succeed or not, I don't know. But this is going to be a Pier 6 brawl. This is pretty interesting.
Well, and the center, it still holds in Florida, doesn't it? Despite the polarization in this country, it's those centrist voters, particularly the I-4 corridor still, right, that could make the difference in this.
Well, I don't know. I'd defer to Fernando on that. I kind of just generally feel like that Florida, much like the country, that the center is pretty hollowed out.
I would agree with that. I think this race is going to be determined by what determines every race for the Democrats. Why do Democrats not win in off-year midterm
turnout
elections? It's turnout. And if the turnout breaks 60% statewide, which I think it does, if it breaks 50% in South Florida, which I think it will, I think it's going to mean Andrew Gillum is going to be the next governor of the state of Florida.
Yeah, Rick Scott won very narrowly twice. Trump won very narrowly, you know, in Florida. But if you go back to the off-year elections with Scott, if Broward County had voted, he wouldn't have won.
That's exactly right.
The results
right
would have been much, much different
much
in 2010
different
and 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, we've got early voting underway in just 2 weeks, and of course, we're about 30 days out from Election Day itself. Really great times here, and we'll continue to have these conversations statewide every Friday at noon here on your radio, statewide in Florida. Fernanda Mondi, the Democratic pollster from Dixon and Amandi, with us in Miami, and Max Babanovich, GOP strategist, with us from our sister station WFSU in Tallahassee. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Great. Great discussion. Thanks, gentlemen. And that is our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Kevin Mershart and Bridget O'Brien are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the director of radio programming in Miami. Our technical director, the radio operations director, is Peter Mertz. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.